Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. And as regular listeners know, our program is not about politics. It's all about individual and collective renewal, recovery of positive emotions, and the capacity to uncover, then joyfully give of our very best at middle age. But of course, none of us live in a vacuum, nor can we ignore what's going on in our country and around the world. And right now, for far too many families of all ages in the U.S., chasing the American dream has become a nightmare. Ballooning federal deficit, now close to $19 trillion, shrinking middle class, where our offspring may not enjoy the abundance and unfettered lifestyle you and I now enjoy, and spreading domestic terrorism in communities large and strong. And what if ISIS were to get its hands on a nuclear bomb or a chemical weapon? And here in the U.S., we're about to launch the process of selecting our next president. And since the Civil War, has this nation ever been so divided? Wouldn't it be great if all of us could come together, collectively wave a magic wand, and select an all-knowing, all-caring, unifying leader capable of addressing our country's and the world's dire challenges? Well, my guest today, Dr. Thomas Rapaldi, Ph.D., contends that such a leader does exist, but not in human form. He also argues that we need to look at our culture to find both the cause of our problems and a cure, and he's here to explain why and to propose a solution. And Dr. Thomas Rapaldi is ministering to those hurting. He has been doing that for over 25 years as a licensed individual counselor and a marriage and family therapist. He's helped provide care for victims both of the Oklahoma City bombing and the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And for his humanitarian efforts, he was named Physician of the Year by President George W. Bush. And he's author of the book published earlier this year titled Wake Up America. And hello, Dr. Rapaldi. It's a privilege to have you here on the cusp of a critical decision point in American history, the elections coming up.
Yes, and thank you. It's a privilege to be here. And I also appreciate you allowing me a little more time than I usually get. They want to know the problem and all the solutions, and you've got 7 minutes to tell us.
Well, what are some of the ways that the American dream is becoming a nightmare for so many, especially the younger generation that's just now starting out? What are some of the symptoms of that?
Well, I actually have divided today into three groups, so you might have to invite me back twice more. But yes, one I think is the millennium generation. We want to look at that.
Yeah.
Two, it's a little different for women. And my wife is here and she's been very helpful. So I'm using a lot of her material. By the way, she came up with the title of the book, so I have to give credit where it's due.
Oh.
A little different for women. Then you have the middle class male out there in today's society. And
yeah.
So, I like your opening statement about the symptoms versus getting to the root of the problems, and that's where I spent time today. Hopefully for your listeners, we can get to some roots of the problem. So first of all, let me say that I think we've got to accept reality. Some of the comments I get is, well, you're kind of doom and gloom.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between being an optimist and being a naive optimist, and I think you have to look at reality. Scott Peck wrote a great book, Road Less Traveled, and quoted the Zen Buddhist when he said, once we accept reality, we can transcend it. And there's the key in today's world for your best age being your middle age. The midlife crisis is the fact, the outcome of our not reassessing and accepting the reality of what's going on in the world and in our lives.
Yeah,
that's
so true.
That's number one.
Accept the fact that we've passed our youth, but... We also, that doesn't mean that we have to give up on life and enjoying the rest of our lives and prospering and helping others while we're in the process of a joyful life.
Nor continue to think that everything's positive when the world's falling apart. See, that's denial. That's why you have a psychologist on.
And then you keep having these discussions on irrelevant topics without addressing the major issues that need to be addressed.
So let me also address your question, because it's a key question. That I would like to back up, if we can, to somewhere around 2006, to our recession stage, because I think that critiquing my own title, it's not necessarily a nightmare today for everyone. When I came up with that title back when I wrote the book, started 5 years ago, it was more of a nightmare because of fact people were experiencing the outcome of what was going on in the recession.
Yeah.
And two major factors I'll share for your audience. And before I do, let me say that with the American dream or most things in life, there's always a counterfeit. And that's the problem, that people go for the counterfeit, the fool's gold.
Yeah.
And so the underlying philosophy was, pragmatically, is that you can borrow and spend your way to prosperity.
Yes,
and there's the lie. And so it looks good in the moment, and all the companies, Fannie Mae's and sector, jumped on it and helped.
Yeah, everybody can have
you.
Their own house, including those that had no way they could possibly afford it. But
exactly.
We did everything we could to get them into the house, and then foreclosed on it a few years later.
Yes, and so then there's your nightmare. So it fell apart.
Yes.
And the thing we have to look at today, 2015, is, and I still want to go back to that for a second because we haven't got to the root of it, as you say in your program, for the individual, and that is very few people, in fact, if you read history, seem to learn from history.
That's
so
true.
Government would mislead us to believe things are better, we're in recovery, we're prospering now. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah,
and, our economy needs at least 3.5 to 5% growth. We're doing 2.5.
Yeah.
Listen to what the IMF is telling us, and you'll see that we're really hurting around the world.
Yeah.
So, people think, well, things are doing better. They're trying to
stimulate the
economy.
Yeah, unemployment's down to 5%, except participation rate is down to 60% or something like that.
You're getting ahead of me, but you're absolutely correct. I wanted to comment on that, so let me jump to that for a second, and then we'll come back.
Yeah.
Those, figures don't lie, but liars can figure. And so what they do is they don't include for the fact that those that are on unemployment, they don't include those that then move to disabilities, they don't include those who said can't get a job and stop looking.
Yeah.
If you include those, you're up to about 12%.
And not to mention all the people that have part-time jobs or jobs way beneath their capabilities or what they want to be doing.
Well, that's where I was at going through. God has put me through everything that my wife and I that we had to write about. So we're not just coming out of a book.
No.
And you're right. If you lose your job today, the male figurehead holder could be a single woman. You can't, quote, go out and get another job. That opportunity with benefits acceptors not there. So your world really gets shook up.
Yeah.
Now you're looking part-time for sure. But let me go back to something, okay, so your listening audience understands the root problem psychologically with what got us in trouble is lack of discipline. We're a very undisciplined society, and so we treat the symptom rather than get to the root of the problem. And that's what a psychologist is about. It takes you years to learn these roots. So until
non-disciplined, but we always expect Uncle Sam or someone else to bail us out when we're in trouble.
Sir, I got all that down here. You are so right on, exactly right. And we're jumping around, which is perfect, okay? You've hit one of the real keys to the millennium generation. They have been taken care of. They're so used to someone taking care of them. And I'm going to jump over to that then for a second. That the scary part of this nightmare of what's coming is the thinking of the next generation is they have a mindset. They have a, it's even worse than that, they have an ideology, a looking for what they grew up in, so now they buy very easily into socialism that someone's supposed to take care of them. And heaven forbid if the government should fall apart when it's $19 trillion in debt.
Yeah,
I mean, heaven forbid, if we had raised the cap, we would have already gone under twice.
Yeah. We always expect that when the states are in trouble or the city, they always expect the federal government to move in, and nobody seems to be concerned that they don't have the money to do it.
But that's what they grew up with. Someone always bailed them out.
Yeah, that's
sure. Then the next thing they're going to do is blame them, and then the next thing they'll riot against them. I mean, you can watch it happen, you know.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So that's part of where the future nightmare, when these bubbles burst, and you've surely hit one of them, a major one is government. You know, we're kidding ourselves. So they'd like you to believe everything's okay, but it couldn't be further from the truth. It's very scary.
Yeah, and in your book, you correctly point out that politicians routinely seek out short-term Band-Aid solutions, effectively kicking the can down the road. Can you give us a couple of recent examples where our leaders have failed to step up to the economic challenge? I guess we've been talking about some of that up to now.
Well, yes. If I work with, as a psychologist working out there in the field, and I've had such opportunity, great opportunity that most psychologists don't, not just being in the office, but with 9/11, et cetera.
Yeah.
Like you said, we don't work in a vacuum, so you have to know a little bit about economics, you have to know politics, et cetera. And, you know, if you look at the top economists, I've read their books, I've studied, I work with them, they will tell you that America is on life support.
Yeah.
I don't know about your credit card, but I can't max mine to $18 trillion, you know.
No.
We can't even pay the interest.
If only we could, then a hamburger would cost about $2 billion.
If we keep going at the rate we're spending and borrowing, and remember, okay, when you borrow, that devalues the American dollar.
Yeah.
We're borrowing from countries like China, who will control us.
Yeah.
Okay, so either that or raise taxes. That's the only three ways the government brings in money.
Yeah, that's right.
That is a guaranteed to shut down the economic engines of America.
Yeah.
Okay, so now, for the next 10, 20 years, if we can't pay it down, and again, young people, rather than the American dream, the nightmare for them is going to be after they get their student loans paid off. Now they've got to go pay off the national debt.
Yeah, not to mention that more and more of us baby boomers are retiring, and there's fewer workers carrying the load of more and more retirees, which the federal government fails to address.
And we know Social Security is about gone. They borrowed and taken all that money.
Yeah.
So you think about people in our age that if the government were to shut down, just that one bubble burst, the 51% of America can't last more than 30 days.
Yeah, that's the sad truth.
81% can't last more than 2 weeks. So what happens if your government check doesn't come this month? That's huge. Now, for the millennium babies, okay, they're probably depending on government. You know, they're not going to have the job. You have to pay off the loans, student loans, and then the national debt. Within the next 10 to 15 years, the national debt, okay, the interest alone in the national debt, will exceed our military budget. Think about
that. Yeah, isn't that frightening? Now, is that with current almost zero interest rates, or wait till the Fed has to raise the interest rates and start paying more for that debt?
There's your Band-Aid approach right there. They can't afford to raise them, which is why the IMF, the international market, cannot raise them. They're screaming now, Magellan is, to raise it in December and January. They can't because America's so deep in debt. They need to borrow money at 2%. You hit it right on the head. Exactly.
Yeah, that's a real mess. Well,
so
we'll get to the good news, a possible way out in a few moments. Let's talk about another major concern on everyone's mind these days, and that's domestic terrorism. And as we struggle with the issue of terrorism, you contend we need to look at our culture, both to find a cause and a cure. And terror organizations like ISIS and Al-Qaeda arose and spread out of instability in the Middle East. But how is the American culture responsible for their success in spreading terrorism here? I'm not sure I understand that.
Right. And in our field, we differentiate between causality and correlation.
Oh, yeah.
So two things can be happening, and one doesn't necessarily cause it. Now,
that's true.
Outcome of the thinking of our narcissistic society, what's in it for me,
yeah.
and the cultural breakdown of lack of morals and ethics,
yeah.
we now have done research studies just recently have come out from Harvard University that has shown a direct correlation between lack of moral development, and whatever that one costs, and the increase in violence. So there's your domestic violence
correlation. It's amazing how they do these studies that confirm what everyone
yeah,
knows
the obvious.
By logic.
Yeah, $100,000 to prove that this lake is polluted, and there's pictures of the pollution. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. You also say that dysfunctional homes and families and the lack of moral guidance in the U.S. Gives them a whole lot of ready candidates for ISIS recruitment. And
absolutely. That's exactly right. Because of the culture and the cultural thinking, they're sitting duck for a new society for more extreme forms of isolated people from dysfunctional homes and et cetera. That they're sitting duck for the something new, that the young people want change. See,
yeah,
people
see
in our age,
the positive
we want to revive.
Some associated young adult with this ISIS guy waving this black flag over and riding
sure.
some kind of a tank or something, and they think that
yeah.
really gives them status.
Well, I have to be very careful with this, okay? You have to be careful what you say, and I'm not saying politically correct. But you
yeah.
have to be careful today, or I have the FBI at my door or whatever. But, you know, when you look at today, our generation, we're looking to revive the American way and the American dream and
yeah.
what built this country and the principles on which the young people, they don't know about all that. What, they're not looking to revive. They're
yeah.
looking for change.
Yeah.
They want to change the whole system. And that's what got Obama elected.
Yeah, hope and change.
Now, well, we've got change now. It's a, how do you like it?
Yeah.
So there's where your point is. It opens the door. We have a million, not picking on immigrants, say, but when you can't separate the good from the bad,
mm-hmm.
we got a million immigrants per year coming into the United States.
Yeah.
What percentage of them are terrorists? What percentage of people of Muslims are going to support terrorism if push comes to shove?
Yeah,
they say now between 5 and 11% support what the terrorists are doing. Oh, my gosh, that's scary.
Yeah,
so
sure is.
There is a correlation between the mindset, the thinking of America, the culture today, and it's not only morality but also ethics. We've got
yeah.
to own our own part, too. In business, the greed, the corruption, in government,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have opened the door for people wanting something new and different. So
yeah,
ISIS,
we're not totally blameless
we'll give it
for
to you.
The rise of
exactly.
domestic terrorism in the family in the country, obviously.
Exactly
but,
correct.
Well, can you give us four or five reasons why domestic terrorists in the U.S. are targeting Christians? I don't understand why they're so negative toward Christians in particular.
Yes, that's another talk that I gave do you ever go into? I can talk about that. First of all, let me complete one thought on our previous
yeah, sure.
topic.
Sure.
I was on a radio talk show this morning, and they were saying they are culture liberals, so give myself away here politically, but the left-wingers, that we really shouldn't need to fear terrorism. And I go, oh, my God.
Until you're blown up or your leg or blown
yeah.
off like those poor people watching the Boston Marathon or something, then you
yeah,
might fear them.
Stupid is telling me don't be afraid to put your hand on a hot burner. I mean, duh.
Yeah.
So they don't understand real fear from anxiety, and so they said, come help us sort this
yeah.
out. But so misinformed. So that's what we're dealing with on the other side of the coin. Now, when you come to just a whole different ballgame here, and yet they're interrelated,
yeah.
you have two distinctions that you need to make between or our viewers, between our listeners, between the ISIS, the Daesh, those units that keep popping up,
yeah.
factions of their ideology, their, quote, religions. Now, let me stop and say, we have a mindset in the West that we separate church and state.
Yes.
they don't understand that in their religion they do not.
Yeah.
So therefore they use their religion, I'm not saying all Muslims, but I'm saying the terrorists, the ISIS, the convert people, they use their religion to support their agenda, to overcome, to take over, to form the world to become Muslim. I mean, that's their agenda by any means. And Allah not only approves, but praises them for it. So their ultimate outcome is martyrdom.
Yeah.
Remember that. That's their goal. So they're honored for the more people they can kill and behead, the more honored they are. Those are trophies.
Yeah.
Okay, now, in our religion, we don't think that way.
No, that's for certain.
Okay, so with our young people today who are so naive and don't understand that, okay, see ourselves, including our, give you some space here with this, but as a Christian nation, number one part of the problem is we're grouped together in ISIS mind. They equate America with Judeo-Christianity.
Yeah.
Okay, now, they see us then not as martyrdoms, they see us as on a crusade. We think we're doing good to send our missionaries over, convert these people. They see us as a threat.
Yeah.
They're coming over, they're taking our people. So if you look back in the history of the movement of Islam across the Middle East, you also see that the only opposing factor was the Christian crusades.
Yes, that's right.
So, yeah, there's where they have that mindset that we're the enemy.
That's now, a little bit out of date since that was, around 1300.
I know, but they still use that.
Yeah.
Okay, now you bring that to America, and you have so many young people, here's the psychology, who will tell you that the number one problem in their life was caused by religion. And you say, okay, what do you mean by that? When they will tell you, these kids, that they were raised in dysfunctional Christian homes.
Yeah.
And so the result of that is they see our religion, Christianity, Judeo-Christian, as a hypocrisy.
Yeah, well, Christianity is to blame for all the dysfunction
exactly.
in the families in the Christians world.
Christians are to blame for everything
that's
going
distorted.
On.
So
absolutely.
So anti-Christ and anti-Christian.
Oh, exactly. You know, Jesus got hung for that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so we're in good company. I mean, yeah, but absolutely right. He was to blame for the world's not taking responsibility. Okay, so now these young people have this. They're sitting duck. Now they go off into our colleges and universities and get further brainwashed by the liberals.
Yeah.
They live in social isolation. Another big factor we found out from research, they don't fit in anywhere. And here comes a group that says, hey, we'll accept it's like a bar, you know, they accept anybody who comes in. Sit down, have a drink.
And the social media, they reach out to them, obviously. It's so easy to do nowadays.
You ask for six factors. There's another factor.
Yeah.
Television, social media,
yeah.
all these things reinforce these movies, you know, killing, and it's just unbelievable. So these are domestic terrorists of a very different mindset than the ISIS. They don't have a clue what they're getting into. But they like that because all of a sudden now they have power. They have acceptance. They have
somebody.
Recognition. Yeah.
In this world,
yes, exactly.
Somebody.
And people also don't understand, we don't study, the power, and I can't emphasize enough, so I think I'm at number six in your question, but doesn't matter, but the power of group dynamics.
Oh, yeah.
So these kids are operating alone, and all of a sudden, you know, you feel alienated, you're ostracized. And here comes a group that says, hey, you think the way we do, join our gang.
Yeah, that's
street
gangs prosper, and that's how obviously ISIS really is a form of a street gang.
Sure.
Effectively. But,
And also, you know, another major factor today is that our young people psychologically, you see this in therapy all the time, they have learned to suppress their feelings. That's why depression's so high. They keep it inside, and beyond depression is a strategy called indifference. So young people who get into that are so cold hearted, so indifferent, the Bible says, you know, the hardened heart, they have a hardened heart, that they don't express their emotions. they express their hatred, their anger, their all that resentment that's pushed down. That's why it comes out for their domestic young people in terms of killings.
Yeah.
We don't get in fight anymore. We just kill you. I'll just kill you.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to talk about some... Sure. This has been kind of depressing. Let's move on to talk about possible solutions to this country's economic and terrorism challenges. Let's say it's January 2017, and you've been elected president, and you're about to give your inauguration address. Assuming nothing significant has happened in 2016 other than your election, in your call to action, how would you describe the mountain that America faces? Well, I guess you've already pretty much described that. But what are a few of the initial action plans you would propose to help snuff out domestic terrorism and get our country back on track economically?
Okay, now, you are not playing fair. I hope it's just you and I on the radio. Because we didn't up for this now when you signed up. You're not playing fair.
Okay, you don't have to be president.
No. I'm going to address your question a little different way, if I may.
Sure.
I'm take advantage of it, yes.
Yeah.
Twofold, two sides of the coin. Number one, I'm saying this for effect. I don't have a clue, and they don't either. That's why you don't have, you know, they tell you the plan, et cetera.
Yeah.
Trump's going to build a wall and put his name on it,
yeah.
And, you know, they're going to have a no-fly zone.
Stop all Muslims from entering the country and all that kind of good stuff.
What happens when the first Russian plane goes through the no-fly zone? Now we got World War III. It's crazy.
Yeah.
They don't think beyond. Okay.
No.
Which, by the way, I give a little plug here. Okay, one of the best candidates, maybe a few that we have out there really, is Ben Carson, because he knows how to think. And I did too. And he is a thinker, and he has wisdom beyond his years, and so he listens and will integrate material as opposed to, I mean, I understand why people are rallying behind Trump. We need a leader. We need someone that's going to take action. But he doesn't think beyond step one, and he scares me.
No.
So that's just off the record. Now, to answer your question, okay,
yeah,
I'm telling you up front, that if I got elected for some reason, however I got elected, 30 days later...
Well, you can be an advisor to Ben Carson if you'd rather.
Okay, that's what I want. By the way, I am. Yeah. 30 days later, I would get shot. And here's why. Here's my approach. I would start holding people accountable and say, listen, if you want to be overweight and dependent on someone to pay for your insurance, you pay for a part of your premium. Do you have any idea how long I would last? Now, you can extrapolate that to whatever else you want. I mean, you see the problem today? So politically, we can't really come up. I have been on government committees. I have suggested suggestions that could help save millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And they will actually say to me, if you dare suggest that, that goes viral. See, they don't want to hear what we can really do.
And yet, in light of what all that you say in the book, you say that all is not lost. And why is there still hope, maybe faint hope, for a brighter future?
Let me answer your question then, okay?
Yeah.
The best thing that I think this country can do, of course, I'm middle-aged, you know, booby-baber. I think the best that we can do, and I mean it, is it's not just a concept with all my heart. I'm not talking about religion. I'm not really religious, but I'm into relationship. And I think until we bring God back into the center, which is what built this nation, our Constitution, our principles, things we live by, were all documented and supported by Scripture. Now we can't even have the Bible in. You can teach the Quran, but you can't teach the Bible. So when telling this, the only thing I know that's going to, your first opening statement, we have to unite. I talked to Ben Carson, and he wrote a book along the same lines called, you know, One Nation.
Yeah.
And I said, Dr. Carson, with all due respect, I said, you know, how do you unite a nation under one nation? It's got to be united under something bigger than itself. And he said, I didn't think of that. And I said, yes, we've got to ascribe to something larger, something that we would hold sacred, that we would find of value. We've lost all that. I mean, they stomp on the American flag. So until we get back to, and it's not like just God, religion, but those basic principles. When you go by those principles, now it starts to answer all your questions, brings us back into balance. Here we go with the national debt, with all of them. We are so out of touch, so out of balance with the principles that make life work.
I like in your book where you raise the question, are we willing to bring God back into the picture? And by saying yes to God, what would this entail? I guess what you've just been discussing, like getting the budget in balance.
Did you read the next line? And if no, you better take a look at the consequences.
Yeah, me. That was my next question. It was going to be that, actually. So,
yes,
so you
exactly.
can cover both of them.
Well, we're experiencing the consequences.
Yeah, that's very true. But maybe
took God out of it. And I don't mean to preach or whatnot, but the Bible's very clear in Romans. It says, man first takes God out of the picture, then the next step is to think he is God, to want to rise to that level. That's exactly what we've done.
Yeah, that's
so
exactly.
If we're going to rely on man, I mean, look what we've got. Now, I'm not saying that God doesn't work through men, that there aren't brilliant, don't go too far with that, the religion, you know.
No, that's true.
But if we rely on man.
But any wise person knows that within himself or herself, not all the answers are contained, and that you really have to depend on a higher power, whether you call it God, universal intelligence, or whatever, that the knowledge is not embedded in your or my brain or anyone else's brain.
See, that's why I need time on these programs and why my book isn't selling, I'm kidding, is that you don't have time to get people to the level that you're at right now. I'm not talking about some God in the sky thing. What you said, and you hit it right on the key with the difference between knowledge and wisdom. And that's why, again, it sounds like I'm pushing, but I have great respect. When I listen, I don't care just how knowledgeable they are and how much understanding they have. I want to know, I want a president that has, and this is what we mean by spiritual, you can't go to Publix and buy 5 pounds of this. I want a candidate that has wisdom. Now, use that criteria, and you'll start going through your candidacy very quick.
Yeah, I can think of a few that I would eliminate from that criteria.
But do you see the answer to your question now? That's what I mean by putting God back in the center. Not some religion we go over and escape to, but bringing that into the depths and dimensions of all aspects of our present-day life. Not something on Sunday we go... time out with.
Yeah, that's true. You know, in your book when you point out, in light of scientific discoveries, advances in technology, and the speed in human knowledge, that some of us say we no longer need God's guidance like those primitives in the Bible needed 3,000 to 6,000 years ago. But in fact, with all those frightening new technologies and scientific knowledge, we need God a lot more because there's so many horrendous possibilities out there for us humans to screw up on.
Well, now let me go back to your question. If we still have time, let me go back to your question about if I'm president and you can have a good laugh. I'm now in a boat. I didn't take swimming lessons.
Yeah.
Okay, the boat's filling with water because there's a big hole in it. And so I'm going to rely on, look, you're laughing already. I'm going to rely on technology to get me a bigger engine and keep pumping out more water. Meantime, you got the rest. There's your lack of wisdom.
Yeah. Meantime, Jesus walks by on the water.
Exactly.
And rescues
we reject it. I know we are not.
No, that's true.
Unbelievable where people are at.
Well,
but again, that's biblical.
It says
we see through a glass darkly, and it's scary.
Well, it's kind of a final question. As ordinary citizens, not politicians, what can you and I do to protect our freedom and wrest our country back from self-serving politicians and corrupt individuals who buy results? And, we obviously aren't on the right track. How do common folks recapture their freedom and recapture the nation?
Well, that's what it takes is common folks, yes. And that's the last half, the last section of the book. The answer is, what can I do? Now, you know, I'm a provocative speaker for the sake of challenge, not just to be provoking. So my answer, again, like the last question you asked, is nothing. Now, once you accept that, then we go, okay, one person can do a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like sitting on the beach with all these, you've heard this before probably, you know, fish that come to shore or and you're trying to throw them back in the water.
Yeah.
Well, I can at least save the ones that I throw back in. Can't save them all individually. So one person can make a difference.
Yeah.
Well, Madeline O'Hara made a difference in getting prayer out of the school. So one person on that side made a difference, Madeline Murray O'Hara. Now, if you get enough people behind you, that's what Hitler did or whatever. But I think the answer to your question, if we're really going to turn it around here, is going to be a transformation in our thinking with respect to, like you said earlier, we've got to go from I, narcissistic generation, to a we and come together united under a greater purpose than just what's in it for me.
Yeah,
and until that happens, and I think, I hate to say it, but I'm very optimistic under God that it can happen, and I'm taking advantage of it, and of the opportunities in avoiding the consequences. That's the best it's going to get for us. However, for those who don't, I'm afraid it's going to have to get worse. So you learn in therapy, some people have to get worse before they get better because they lack wisdom and they won't listen.
They have to hit the bottom before.
That's right. So we may have to take something that finally shakes us up. And then, not to be sarcastic, I mean it's very encouraging, but when you watch what people do, even when they hit bottom, then they run to God, 9/11, we run to the churches. I mean, the increase was unbelievable for 30 days.
Yeah, that's right, for 30 days. That's part of it. Tell us about your new book, Wake Up America. How is it organized, and what's the primary message you want us to take away?
We just did.
Yeah, okay. No,
And yes, I think that, you know, people think I'm being religious. They misunderstand it. I'm trying to be very pragmatic. But unless we bring God and know who that true God is in us and through us and together, back into our daily lives, to the depths and dimensions of all aspects of our lives, I think we're kidding ourselves. Number two, the way, what are the steps? And I think the end there would be a beginning for a second book, which we'll call The Call to Action.
Yeah.
And that is the American people are going to have to, Chronicles 7:14, we're going to have to humble ourselves, as we've said, and take responsibility for the part that we're playing.
Yeah, that's
and
so true.
If I get to speak at the National Prayer Breakfast, Christians are using Band-Aids too. Well, let's just pray about it. They offer you a quick fix. Here's a scripture that'll solve it.
Yeah, and just praying about it's not getting it done either.
So we need to humble ourselves. We need to acknowledge our part that we're playing first.
Yeah,
if my people would humble themselves and seek the face of God. See, we want to pray, God, give me this, God, give me that.
Yeah.
But we're not seeking the face of God to that depth. Number three, then pray from a spirit of humility and brokenness. You'll have a different prayer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
where
should we go to preview and purchase your book? Where's the best place to find it?
Well, the book itself, go right to the website, and you can get it directly from me. I even have a 25% discount for my people that have been online with me, but I will open that up so your viewers can use it as well and put in the promotional code, and they can buy it directly from me and save 25%.
And what is that website they should go to?
It's Wake Up America by Thomas Rapaldi.com.
And that
also on
Facebook. Is R-I-P-A-L-D-I, just in case
that's
you
correct.
Don't know how to spell it.
That's correct. No dots, no capitals. Yeah. And you can also get there through Facebook. You get there through Twitter. You can also buy e-books through Amazon. There's other sources.
Yeah.
But the book itself, you do better get it directly through me.
Now, what's that code they need for the discount?
Thankful25.
Okay, remember that. Thankful 25.
Thankful 25.
Well, in conclusion, I remember in a youth when there wasn't such a vast divide between Democrats and Republicans, and Democrats working with Dwight Eisenhower, Republicans with John Kennedy, and long-term House Speaker Tip O'Neill cooperating with President Reagan to fix Social Security. And there was also not so much sensitivity and political correctness floating around. Can you believe in grammar school as a class we used to visit a Presbyterian church at Christmas and viewed a flannel board depiction of the birth of Christ and the Christmas story in the sanctuary? It didn't really seem to offend the non-Christian kids that much. And can you imagine the backlash that such a visit would cause today? Was I simply naive, or did God really have a more central role in America back then? And we certainly aren't doing that great a job on our own, are we? And whatever your religion, or even if you're agnostic or into secular humanism, I suggest all of us acknowledge a power beyond ourselves and turn to that power for guidance. And let's all encourage our leaders to do the same. Sounds like a pretty good idea. And thank you so much, Dr. Thomas Rifaldi.
You bet.
For your wake-up call.
You bet.
And best of success in getting your message out, because by golly, we sure need it.
Well, it's God's message, too. So thank you. One of his servants. And I hope to talk to you again and your listeners.
To close today's program, I'd like to speak all you baby boomers out there. Those of you in the upper range of middle age, after all, the youngest baby boomer turned 50 in 2014, according to the sociologists. But members of Generation Y or whatever the next age group, you can listen also. And if you're like me and you're over 50, maybe even older, I think we have a choice. Choice number one is to sit back and do little or nothing, maybe complain a lot and regret the loss of our youth and kind of like rotting on the vine. And choice number two is to mature like a fine wine, stay active and involved, and maybe shoot to become the first generation ever, at least since Methuselah's time, to live to be over 100. You know, I recently came across an article on the internet suggesting baby boomers as a generation shoot to become the new centennials, where a majority of us live over 100 years. Just like when you were baby boomers, hippies, and yuppies, you always demanded the most, and you would not sit, stand, or settle for less. And remember, you want to leave this world a better place than the world you were born into. That's always been a baby boomer mantra, hasn't it? And you still need more time. So why not shoot to be the first generation where living past 100 is a common occurrence, not the exception to the rule? But I'm not talking about living out your final years idle, lying around in poor health in a nursing home. I'm talking about remaining involved, keeping our brains and our bodies sharp and in shape, so as we approach 100, we can do so with dignity and wisdom, improving the quality of life using sound health and wellness principles. There are no natural rules, after all, that dictate that our health and mental facilities must decline as we grow older. That's a common myth, and there's no factual basis in it, because there are ways to stay young and involved, and so much of our well-being revolves around our mental outlook. Do you expect today, tomorrow, and future days to bring joy and happiness? Can you think of ways as you grow older that you can continue to help those around you find joy, comfort, and prosperity in their lives? Are you at peace with the person inside? You know, some people go through their entire lives not really feeling good about who they are, and that's such a sad occurrence. Remember, our goal is to enjoy living each day and to make this world, at least our little corner of it, better for our children and our grandchildren, so that our children and grandchildren can build upon what we've accomplished, build upon our legacy to make things even better after we're gone. And if you need help in transforming your outlook on life, remember my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, by Roy C. Richards. You can find it on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or my website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com. And now let's all go out and shoot for 100 joy-filled, productive, and satisfying years. Whether you're retired or not, or plan to retire, There's still plenty of stuff left to do, and you can enjoy every minute of it. And let's all become the centennial generation. And talk to you again next week on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.